nation through the workers' blood shall run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
Taken untold millions that they never toil to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
Welcome to the Circle Day Show. Once again, this is Donica DeLung standing in for Yodette with another bit of anarchist history. This week and this month, 100 years ago, saw one of the biggest strikes the city has ever seen when Rudolf Rocker led up to 14,000 East End Jewish textile workers out on strike. Unfortunately, very, very few other people are talking about it, so we're dedicating the whole show tonight to talking about what happened then and what it means for now. I'm joined in the studio by a member of Solidarity Federation who are connected to the history of Rocker's organizing and the movement. But first, yesterday evening, I interviewed David Rosenberg, who's a member of Jewish Socialists and organizes historical walks in the East End. And the first thing I asked him is how important the strike 100 years ago was to the Jewish community in the East End.
Well, it was a really crucial strike because in the period from the time when Jewish immigrants were coming in large numbers from Eastern Europe to the East End of London and getting involved in the workplaces that were the jobs that were available in the workplaces, which were essentially the sweatshops, every time they organized the sweatshops and tried to make gains, those gains were... they were important, but they could be rolled back unless there was a very strong union presence. And one of the key things about the 1912 strike is that it really established the union principle in the workshops, that all the sweatshops had to, you know, they had a right to be organized in unions. And that was recognized as one of the outcomes of the strike.
Why do you think the strike has been ignored by many of those writing about trade union history in the UK, including even Bob Holton, who wrote about the Great Unrest and the syndicalist period?
I don't know. I mean, it's a funny thing because in some ways 1889 is given a lot more prominence because we only had the dock strike and the tailors striking then at the same time. And there's lots of references to that kind of strike that was happening together. 1912, this is kind of I don't know. It's maybe seen as more marginal in terms of the bigger picture, but to my mind, it's a very significant one. Although both of them are significant, and 1889 and 1912 are very good examples of the Jewish community, immigrant community in the East End, and the Irish community in the East End being very, very solidly united.
And of course, one of the areas where this is rarely mentioned is in the history of the anti-fascist movement of the 1930s in the East End. Bill Fishman, the Jewish historian, has pointed out that at the heart of the Battle of Cable Street, there were bearded Jews and Irish Catholic dockers, as he said, standing up to stop Mosley.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, the relations between the Jews and the Irish community were not always of the best, but they were certainly very strong at a trade union level, particularly that tie-up between the tailors and the dockers. But also in the 1930s, Oswald Mosley, the fascist leader, was making a big play to try and win the Irish community against the Jewish community, and you know he was kind of building on some antipathy that was there and was also preached from the pulpit in the churches. But the anti-fascist forces, Communist Party, Independent Labour Party, and the Jewish People's Council, they were working very hard to win as much of the Irish community in solidarity. And on the day in the Battle of Cable Street, it was very clear that the Irish community were much more with the anti-fascists.
And finally, David, what do you think the contemporary trade union movement can learn from this period when such a massive movement was built?
Well, one of the things that really interests me when sort of looking back on that strike and sort of reading different accounts of it was the way that the strike managed to win very wide community support. It got support from other trade unions. Other trade unions levied members to support the strike, so they'd have a strike fund, and you had Jewish Bakers Union donating bread and cigarette makers donating cigarettes. But there was also a much broader community support for the strike that was done through organising public meetings in the community. So it was seen as the East End as a whole taking a stand, you know, against this the way the sweatshops and the whole sort of way that was condemning so many people to terrible conditions and terrible poverty. And I think in terms of now, it's very important that workplace struggles happen, but those workplace struggles must connect to wider community struggles. And I think you can draw some strength from looking back at the way disputes like 1912 did that.
That was David Rosenberg of the Jewish Socialist Organization. And actually, David is planning to hold a historical walk of the East End on Sunday week. The details haven't quite been firmed up, but we will put the information on the Circle Day website as soon as it's organised. So turning now to my guest, Rob Ray, who may be known to people who've been reading Freedom for a few years or reading some of the other anarchist publications. Rob, do you want to tell me what's your involvement at the moment? You're in Solidarity Federation. Can you tell me a little bit about what Solidarity Federation is?
Solidarity Federation is kind of the modern manifestation of the sort of British section of the IWA, the International Workers' Association, which is an anarcho-syndicalist international organisation, I guess. Fundamentally, we tend to focus on things like labour organising and issues around workplace struggles, basically. For example, our most recent campaign has been against Workfare, so we've been sort of out on the streets, petitioning people, putting the placards up outside businesses which currently participate in Workfare, which we feel is a fundamentally regressive piece of legislation designed to undercut fundamental wage structures.
And the IWA, so going back to its origins, is very much connected to what Rudolf Rocker was doing in London and the kind of whole Great Unrest period. though there was a bit of a gap between the work that Rocco was doing in 1912 and how it led into 1913 and the actual establishment of the IWA.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's a big gap in there in which, I mean, it's a really interesting period because obviously you have the whole Bolshevik Revolution thing going on, and the enormous tensions that were going on at that time, specifically for the anarchist movement, in which you had this initial blaze of interest in what was going on in Russia. And you had lots and lots of different anarchist groupings from all over Europe, for example, came along to the first the founding Congress of what became the Profintern, the Bolshevik International of Trade Unions, in which lots and lots of groups showed up. They were all incredibly enthusiastic about it, asking all sorts of questions. And then bits and pieces started coming out and it got a lot more shady. And obviously you had a situation where, as it turned out, lots of anarchists were being jailed by the Bolsheviks. Some of them were being shot. The Bolsheviks didn't really want to talk about that. They wanted to talk about creating this international under which all the anarchist-led, if you like, unions or anarchist-organised unions would be subordinated to the will of the party. So you had this incredibly complex situation where people were still trying to work out what was going on. And it took people away in the initial stages from organising a specific anarchist international. Though obviously, as more came out, the IWA was formed from a number of different groups, primarily the FAUD in Germany. And Rocker was sort of right there in the centre of it at that time. He was one of the founding general secretaries. He was the general secretary along with two other people, Alexander Shapiro and August Sushi, I believe. So interesting times.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's not actually that much music from around the period, but actually music has always played a big part in this. So just to have a little bit of a musical break, I found a track from a very similar strike on the other side of the Atlantic, the Lawrence Textile Strike in January 1912, also known as the Bread and Roses Strike. It had a lot of similarities with what was going on in London. It was a lot of immigrant textile workers. They went out on strike. They were backed, in this case, by the IWW. But organising very much in a similar way to the way that Rudolf Rocker did. So this is Utah Phillips with Annie DeFranco and Bread and Roses.
As we come marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill osprey, are brightened by the beauty a sudden sun discloses. And the people hear us singing bread and roses, bread and roses. As we come marching, marching, we battle to men, for they are in this struggle and together we can win. Our lives shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts can starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses.
So, looking back at both what was going on in Lawrence and what was going on in London, and you know, going back to what David was talking about, one of the things that really made those strikes a success was the way that the people involved in them were absolutely embedded in the community. You know, Rocker's a particular example of that because he'd been living there for around 20 years at that point. His life partner, Millie, was from the East End of London. This is something that a lot of trade unions have lost, and as a result we see them concentrated in particularly in the public sector and losing control of the private sector. What kind of things do Solidarity Federation do to try and kind of reconnect workers with their communities?
Well, I think that, most sort of anarchist and leftist groups in general are starting from a very low point at the moment because, as you say, links with the community. And I think the direct mandate of a community, which is required for any organisation to work effectively, has been lost, particularly post-Thatcher, but specifically in the last couple of decades, it's been a very low point to start from. So in many ways, Solfed is still feeling its way, as I think most organisations are. I mean, the sort of thing that we tend to focus on are obviously, because we're workplace-based, we tend to try and do things that revolve around our area of expertise, I think, in a sensible way. So some of the initiatives that we've come up with, our best one so far has been organiser training, which basically we go to anywhere where there's a group of people who want to learn just the basics of grassroots style trade unionism, how to stand up to your boss, what you need to know in terms of your rights, how to do things like workplace mapping, working out, you know, who you need to have on side, who you need to avoid getting on the wrong side of before you feel confident to actually make changes in your workplace. So it's that kind of thing that we're doing at the moment. I mean, the sort of thing that we'd really love to be able to do more often, but at the moment, obviously, as a small organisation with and dispersed organisation as well, we don't have resources to do at the moment, is get much more embedded within our communities directly. So helping out on sort of local community campaigns, getting involved in things which directly benefit people on a day-to-day basis. I mean, fundamentally, the left needs to be there for the community. It can't, you know, you can't expect the community to come to you simply because you have this wonderful theory that you're espousing to them.
One of the really interesting things about the fact, you know, this is a centenary of a particular era. The Great Unrest was pretty much a four-year period in UK history from 1910 to the beginning of the First World War, where people lost faith in political parties, started rising up independently and doing things like occupying space, which was one of the famous things that the Wobblies did in the US. They'd turn up in the town square and try and take it over. What I find amazing recently is we're starting to see exactly the same thing happen. And I know on May Day, I was out taking pictures of after the traditional march from A to B and the speeches. There was a much more... to be honest, a much more fun bit of direct action going on. And it brought together more seasoned kind of political types. The Solfed battle was very clear there. But also some of the people who've been newly introduced to kind of radical direct action politics through the Occupy movement and to UK and CUD. So what do you see in that? Do you see in that the possible springing forth of a new kind of direct action politics?
I think it can do. I don't think that it's a given by any means. I mean, you look at the difference between the British Occupy movement, for example, which had enormous trouble over the winter, a combination of sort of losing key spaces through legislation and, well, dreadful British weather, let's be honest. And there's a big difference between that and the Indignados in Spain, which is a very similar movement, but which had... simultaneously had much deeper roots already established in the community, much larger, more militant, more effective trade unionism in place, and a long history to draw on of that kind of direct action and much nicer weather. So where you have the most recent sort of relaunching of Occupy was interesting, and hopefully it'll progress very quickly. Spain, it didn't go away in the same way over the winter for Spain, and actually they had a very interesting form of organising, which they actually made a decision as winter came up to disperse themselves into communities and actively embed themselves, which is something which I think is probably the best possible thing they could have done, because it's actually getting out of that effective self-ghettoisation. I mean, it's obviously creating a place where people can come to, but again, it's not pushing outwards into areas where people wouldn't even think of doing that kind of thing.
One of the things that actually killed the Great Unrest syndicalist movement in the UK were the union hierarchies. What was going on very close to the Jewish tailor strike in 1912 was the Dockers strike, which happened a couple of weeks afterwards. But in comparison with the mass strikes and huge solidarity of 1911, which actually the London Dockers benefited from, when it came to 1912, the Dockers were effectively left alone. The hierarchies had started to retake control of what was going on. It was interesting on May Day that there were a lot of kind of the senior trade unionists saying very good things about the Occupy movement, about UK and Cut. Yet we've heard today that the TUC has announced another day of action in October, which isn't exactly the kind of thing that's going to fill the government with fear. And this is one of the interesting that we this is the kind of thing that we need to I think we need to point out is actually that depending on the comfortable hierarchy to start organising things for us means that we're facing a situation where we've got pretty much 6 months to wait before there's an organised day of action.
And that's been something which has been a repeating pattern over the last couple of years. I mean, we've had, what was it, June 30th, followed by November 30th, followed by the March March strike. The whole way in which the TUC is approaching it is sort of one-off days every, at best, 4 to 5 months. One thing that has been noticeable has been a dropping off of faith that this will make any difference. When you think what the first big marches were like, they were just massive. You filled London with people. I just don't see that happening in October, because by this time we will have had 2 years of no movement from the government and just kind of promises of, well, bread and roses tomorrow.
I suppose the main message that we should be putting out from here is actually calling on people to try and organise themselves and organise a bit more spontaneously. And there are ongoing events organised by yourselves and others. So there's another Day Against Workfare has just been announced by Set London Soft Fed.
Yes, we are going to be having a big day for action against workfare. It's part of an ongoing thing. We want as many people as possible, not just to kind of come along on our stuff, but to actually sort of get involved on their own level and push. I mean, this is actually something which has been generally not been a bad turnout from other groups. I mean, sort of the Anarchist Federation have been involved in this kind of thing, and actually various left-wing groups have been involved in it. Sort of the SWP have managed a few well-reported actions here and there. It's and sort of building on that kind of thing, specifically saying, like, it needs to be communities which get involved in this kind of stuff beyond sort of the anarchist milieu, which is obviously a very limited in how many places we can go to at once and sort of make a fuss.
I suppose we're coming towards the end of what we're talking about, but I think one of the things that I hope people got from this show and that we really like to undermine is that when we talk about anarchist history, we're not talking about dead history. We're talking about, in some ways, an ideal. It would be amazing if we could organise 14,000 people to walk out of work tomorrow and shut down a part of London. To continue this discussion, anyone who's in around the East End next Wednesday, there's going to be a public meeting organised by David and the Jewish Socialists. I will be one of the speakers. So that's on next Wednesday evening, so tomorrow week, at 7 o'clock in the library in Bishopsgate Institute in the East End of London. Another thing that Yodette has told me I really, really need to point out is that the new Circle Day T-shirts are available from Sabcat Printing. That's on sabcat.com. And every T-shirt bought helps to support the show and help to keep the show going. So just before we put on a bit of music to kind of hopefully get people aroused, like I'm hoping that Solidarity Forever by at the beginning did, just turn back to Rob. And is there any final words you'd like to add in?
No, I've had a good time with this so far.
Okay, and just to finish this off, this is Dropkick Murphys with the Workers' Song.
Turn night and day by hand and by brain. To a prison.